In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane podcast, where queer friends and allies gather to review and discuss the original X-Men comics in continuity order. We are over on the Patreon channel today, recording this just a few days after a very divisive and frustrating election. This is my second show recording since then. I found recording yesterday to be enormously healing and centering, just to join with my like queer friends and loved ones over topics about serious things, but fictional serious things. So today we're going to be talking about communism and mass graves, but we're still going to have a great time, I promise, as we focus on a random mutant character that I don't think anyone thinks of. If you listed 500 mutants, I don't think this guy would cross your mind, but he weirdly lives in my brain as one of the characters that has so much potential. I think he's fascinating. This is the character of Alexei Garnov, or Blind Faith. I'm so excited to welcome two friends who also had never heard of this guy, but they agreed to join me on a research journey. Welcome to my lovely friends, Ruth and Price and Charles Bush. Let me have you both introduce yourselves. Let me know your pronouns. Tell everybody a little about yourself. And I would love to just hear what your initial thoughts on Blind Faith are. And were you familiar with this character at all before we began our journey? Let's begin with the incredible Ruthann. Hi, Ruthann. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chad. I'm Ruthann Price. Pronouns she, they. I am a public library manager in Toronto, and I had never heard of this character before. I was actually really proud that I'd heard of most of the X-Men in this issue. Anyone who's heard me before knows my reputation as the person who knows nothing about any of this. So my thoughts on the character, it took me all the way through the first issue to realize which one of them was Blind Faith, because I think they only mentioned his code name in passing and then never say it again. But he was a pretty cool dude. The group of resistors is a pretty interesting concept. So
yeah, I like this character. Ruthann, you often cross my mind when I'm making my show, where I have to say something like, okay, hang on everybody. I know a lot of you know this, but I have to explain to some of my listeners who Venom is. Like, whenever I have to like slow something down, you're not in an insulting way, just because I know you're a new fan and like my show's been a big introduction to this universe. Like, I adore your company every time.
You're absolutely welcome to call it the Ruthann segment if you need to.
Ruthann, this is for you. I'm just going to use that on the show as we jump into giant size in the new year. There's a whole bunch of continuity on our way. You thought Silver Age was crazy. Here we go. Charles A. Bush, the incredible writer, is back with us as well. Hi, Charles.
Hey, hi guys. I'm so happy to be back. I'm really, really pumped for this episode. My name is Charles A. Bush. I'm a young adult queer fiction writer from Philadelphia. My book, Every Variable of Us, is available wherever books are sold. So please show some love. I never heard of this character, and I have a Marvel sleeve tattoo, including even more Marvel characters tattooed on me and other places you can't see. People can't see this, but I'm holding up my Marvel encyclopedia that has every character ever written by Marvel, and he's not in this book. So I was really pumped for this, and let me just say, without spoiling too much, it did not disappoint. I really, really enjoyed reading about him, and I really hope he makes his way to the film and TV side of things as quickly as possible, because he's really, really cool what they're doing here. I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, so I share this with folks regularly. I've got a weird form of ADHD. If I've got an idea in my brain, it bugs me until I get it out. And I think every writer understands that a little bit, every creative person. So I've been doing Silver Age research. I mean, I'm a professional therapist, but I research for my show 20 plus hours a week sometimes. I love it. I'm having fun. I'm doing these huge academic panels, and I get these ideas. You start to put the pieces together. I'm like, oh, here's this story that fits there. So I hope to write some of these stories for Marvel one day. I feel like I'm the Silver Age guy, right? And I have a bunch of stories and scripts I've written that like kind of fill in the blanks. And I don't need to tell the story, but I recently was trying to expand in a personal script on the character of Fred Duncan, who's the FBI agent ally of Charles Xavier from back at the beginning, who has a lot of resonance with the X-Men, but has literally just never been used. So there's a bunch of facts about him that we know, but we don't know what the revelations are. For example, he was murdered by a mutant, but we don't know who killed him. There's a bunch of crazy stories about this guy, and I found myself writing a huge story for him. Part of that story involved him going to Russia in my story. Xavier has what we learn in the 90s to be what he calls the mutant underground. There's a group of allies. This idea of Charles Xavier being in America, but having centers of influence around the world and having people who are like supporting his cause in their own cultures, this guy is the one that came to mind. Alexei Garnov is a character named Blind Faith. And in my brain, he's kind of the Russian or Soviet Charles Xavier. And it's a really interesting idea when you watch what happens and where this guy kind of bleeds in and out of the continuity. Now, Russia outside of Canada, I think, are the two real countries in the Marvel Universe that have the most intense history. We've got places like Wakanda and Latveria that get regularly explored. But Russia and Canada have these huge governments and crazy politics and like corruption. And there's a lot of mutants in both places that tend to interface with our characters. Do you guys have any favorite Russian mutant or Russian characters that pop into mind? Colossus, of course, is the number one for a lot of
Magic is up there, but I really love, since the movies and the Thunderbolts trailer just came out yesterday at Brazil D23, the Red Guardian. I think he's pretty sweet, which is funny because Guardian's mentioned in this comic that we're talking about today, but it's not Alexei. Then again, I mean, Natasha is great.
Yeah, Black Widow is another one. Like, you're like, oh yeah, Black Widow, right. White Widow as well.
Yelena, right? I love Yelena. Florence Pugh is great in portraying her in the movie. So,
Ruth Ann, do you have any favorites?
I mean, Charles listed them all. I am partial to Ilyana as well. I really, really like Magic. I like Magic in general. It's my favorite sort of genre of the characters. So I'm always going to tend towards someone who can swing a soul sword and take it a limbo. So,
yeah.
There's a number of mutants people don't often think of. Top of the list are Russian superheroes Ursa Major, Vanguard, and Darkstar. Darkstar is a huge favorite among the kind of closet favorite for a lot of people. These are all mutant characters. Russia has a lot of really interesting history in our modern world, but we really see it explored right from the beginning of Marvel Comics. If you go back to the 1960s, it's all threats of like atomic energy and nuclear war and the space race, and Russia is a huge part of all these stories. There's a giant number of supervillains from Russia that hit the Fantastic Four, Iron Man, and Hulk books alone. Characters like the Red Ghost, the Presence, who is basically Chernobyl. He's a guy that like absorbed a bunch of radioactive energy. He is a Dark Star and Vanguard's dad. There's a number of characters I'm quite fond of from these eras. Another huge one is the Crimson Dynamo. Russia has a habit, and I am not Russian, nor do I have a Russian on this show. We will approach some content as we get into Colossus in the new year, where I'll be doing much more in-depth research. But at least in American media through the 80s, 70s and 80s, Russia has a large presence in our films based on some of these topics. We have Rocky fighting a Russian boxer. We have movies about chess where it's an American opponent versus a Russian opponent. There's kind of this constant energy of one-upsmanship. And then we get a lot of tropes that are fulfilled back in those early days. There's the little ugly Russian guy. There's the deadly ballerina turned, you know, Mata Hari spy energy, which is very Black Widow at the start. There's the giant suits of armor. Iron Man is a little sleek guy. Crimson Dynamo is a big giant red guy, right? But they're hammering the sickle all over everything. It's very anti-communist for the most part when we explore our stories, kind of until we get into the mid-70s, where it's very much like the Russian government will conscript you, they'll take advantage of you, they'll brainwash you, they'll turn you into a sleeper agent, they'll hold your family hostage and then send you off into battle, right? So it's all of that in our superhero stories, but we see those reflected in so many of classic films, spy thrillers, and again, things like sleeper agents, like the Manchurian Candidate. I'm summing up a whole bunch of stuff, but in the mid-70s is where we start to get into a more sympathetic version of stories in the Soviet Union or Russia. And again, as time continues to go on, those stories have to continue to be adapted. Colossus is a character we meet in the mid-70s in Giant Size X-Men number one. We also meet his little sister, Ilyana. We later learn he has a brother, Mikhail, who was in the space race and got lost in space. They thought he was dead for years. Turns out he's a reality-warping mutant. Another character we haven't mentioned is Omega Red, who's like the deep-seated agent that gets sent out. So there's a bajillion versions of all these stories.
I think it's interesting that the US and the USSR at the time, they were superpowers, right? The metaphor breaks down really easily, I think, into this kind of story and having a monolithic enemy. The Cold War, I think, did a lot to simplify this kind of storytelling because there was someone who was very obviously the person that you were against, right? And there was that fight. It's an easy villain. And so I think I like that later things started to get more complicated because real life is more complicated.
Yeah, Marvel through the 50s was commie smasher everything, right? Yeah. It was Captain America commie smasher. I've weirdly been reading a lot of White Girl Jungle comics in preparation for the Shanna the She-Devil episode coming out next year. All through the 50s, even like there's the white girl living in the African jungle, but the real villains are the commies who are trying to take over the space. And she just keeps fighting commies over and over again in these like mildly racist stories where like a bunch of animals get murdered all the time. When we get to Colossus, things are a little bit more sympathetic. Colossus lives on a farm with his family. There's the idea that you work and you don't necessarily, oversimplifying, you don't necessarily profit from your work. It's all about sharing with the community, sharing with each other, helping each other survive. Capitalism, which is personal gain, versus socialism, at least the idea of which is supposed to be everybody works together. And Colossus's family seems very happy, but tragedy keeps happening to his family over and over again every time the state gets involved, because when they have mutant children, the state keeps having bad things happen, resulting in bad things happening with Ilyana, Mikhail, Colossus, and even the murder of their parents over the years in various different stories. It's a pretty strong through line when we read a Colossus story, his connection to the Russian government. The Russian government also has its own version of Avengers and their own versions of various other superheroes, almost always as the villains, but we start to see more sympathetic takes on these characters in the 80s and 90s. Let's start with the Black Widow here for just a moment. Black Widow's original origin story, and Charles, you just referenced this character, is that she was married to a really amazing, like, soldier named Alexei Shostakov, but he died when he was, like, testing a fighter plane. And now she's been conscripted into being a spy. She wears black with a veil over her face and flirts with American men to, like, get their secrets. And then she pulls a gun out of her purse, right? It's like, that's very much this character. A few years later, though, the second wave feminism era starts in the comics, and Black Widow suddenly, like, long red hair, wearing skin tight black, dating Daredevil, but saying things like, I don't need a man. I choose to be with you, but I don't need one. And then she's like brought into the Avengers. So you start to see the influences shift the characters around. It's early in the Avengers where Alexei Shostakov is revealed to have been alive, and he's become Russia's Captain America, the Red Guardian. And there's multiple versions of this character, but he's kind of like the Russian Captain America. So whenever one guy's not available, they put another guy in the suit. And some of their other characters like Vanguard and Dark Star are some of that as well. When one of them dies, they'll conscript a new guy to become that character. Vanguard, Crimson Dynamo. Like, they always have some of these classics moving around. What was it like for you guys to jump into the superhero world of Marvel Comics, Russian mutants? It's not a journey many X-Men fans take.
I loved it because the mutant X-Men in general is what brought me to comic, being a black queer man, you know, back in the 90s when I was watching X-Men every morning on Saturday mornings. You know, it's that Charles is Martin Luther King and then Eric is Malcolm X, that whole civil rights kind of thing. So the way this comic read and the way I read it, maybe I'm the only one that did, but with the death camps and like having mutants be this frowned upon species, a race that needs to be eradicated, it felt very Hitler Germany, you know what I mean? Like, in the way that Blind, you know, Faith comes
into it felt very Stalin, right?
Yes, yes, of course. But like, it also felt like he was like the Schindler's List of the mutants. This is like X-Men Schindler's List almost, it felt like.
Referring to Blind Faith specifically?
Yes, like how he was like, I'm going to save mutants. I'm going to be, while I'm a part of this, being Russian and being deep-seated in this like organization, I can actually help mutants. I really thought that was very interesting of a story to tell. And I was like, you know, on the edge of my seat, seeing what was going to happen for sure. So yeah, I really loved how they played with that.
Yeah, it was a really interesting introduction. And just the juxtaposition between the X-Men who are pretending to be X-Factor, who are like well-funded and, you know, doing this from a position of like power and having all of those resources available, and the comparable work being done in the Soviet Union with people who have like nothing, right? And being able still to do that sort of work. And then again, at the end, finding once again that the villain, as usual, is one of your own people who has decided to break bed.
When it comes to Russia, Russia's obviously a very complex place with a very complex history. Some of the modern mythology that we draw upon most often in storytelling, we have the idea of like that classic Russian novel all about like human suffering, right? But we tend to think of things like Chernobyl, the idea of Russian sleeper agents, again, which is the thing I mentioned before. We tend to think of the idea of people being pulled in against their will. There's kind of a through line of like, whenever you see an American movie about a Russian athlete, like they push him to like inhumane levels and he's like the strongest and biggest, but it's because he's not happy. We have this idea of like corrupt government. Even in the modern era, I say the name Vladimir Putin and you have some feelings about it, right? Another story we see quite often is like the overthrow of the Rasputin family that was in the lead. That's the Anastasia story. If you go to Seattle in a particular section of the city, there's a 16-foot statue of Vladimir Lenin, who was one of the first rulers over a century ago that killed a whole bunch of people. It's like a very controversial thing to have this giant statue in the city. There's some really interesting things that we see really playing into our Russian stories. Some of my favorite stories, though, are the ones that are about Russian rebellion. We see a lot of stories about what that counter movement, what queer life. We have people in films that will like sneak in into a secret club and they put blue jeans on and like celebrate with American music because they can't wear blue jeans or listen to American music. And it's kind of this like sign of rebellion. And the government will find them and drag them away to jail because they did this open thing. How dare you wear blue jeans in private? You know, there's a lot of that kind of energy. And I think this character, Alexei Garnov, captures a lot of that like rebellious energy in the face of atrocity. The story we're going to open with here is X Factor Annual Number One in 1986. And go look up Russian and American relations in 1986 if you would like a little bit of a crash course about what's happening, because it was a very complex time in American politics and in Russian politics. But there was a lot of effort to try to agree and get along, and a lot of like behind the scenes underground stuff going on too. We're not going to delve deep into that, but it's a complex history that we just won't take the time for today.
I feel like the Cosmo erasure is big in this podcast. So I want to apologize to my Cosmo fans, because Cosmo is a great, great Russian character too. We didn't mention him earlier when
Cosmo the
we were talking about.
telepathic dog.
Yeah, so I love
You
Cosmo.
love a pet character.
I do, but Cosmo's really freaking cool. So I do
Cosmo's
like me some
great.
Cosmo.
The two of you I already have in mind for a Flerken episode someday.
Excellent. My Flerken's just left the room,
I
so.
know. My Flerken's locked out. Goose is not going to get in here because he will not let me be on the computer.
When we get into the 70s, that's when the original X-Men join the Champions, and one of their teammates is the Black Widow. And pretty soon, we meet the character Darkstar as well. So, again, there's a lot of mythology in all the Marvel comics, and it goes really deep. But this idea of Russian mutants, I think, kind of begins with Darkstar and Colossus as kind of the premise of where things stem from. Now, in the mid 1980s, we have a new book launched. It's X Factor. The premise is very complicated. There was a lot of division in the Marvel offices at the time. And basically, Claremont had a very tight control of the X-Men in this era. He quit the book about 5 years later in 91 because editorial kept giving him mandates, like, you must turn Magneto back into a supervillain. But in this story, there was kind of an editorial mandate. We have to get all of the original X-Men back together because we want to bring Jean Grey back from the dead, which is something Claremont was adamantly opposed to. So they kind of took those characters away from him. We have Cyclops, Angel, Beast, Jean Grey, and Iceman back together, and they have created a very complicated premise for how they approach being superheroes. Charles, do you want to talk about this?
I thought it was really, really actually kind of ingenious that they're like, okay, we're going to kind of pose as bounty hunters, essentially. I guess that's kind of what they are.
I would say more like Proud Boys. That's a terrible
Well,
thing to say, but they're
I guess
posing
I
as mutant hunters. If you
yeah,
see, if
sure.
you suspect a mutant, call this number and we'll come get him for you.
Right, right,
It's
right.
no.
Yeah. I see my naive, innocent mind always go whenever I hear like call this number, we'll do something, I always think of the Ghostbusters.
See something, say something. It's very that
Right.
energy.
Yes, it is. And these mutants that we know are heroes are posing as these Proud Boys, if you will. And they're going after these mutants, but when they find them, they're actually saving them. So they're using this as almost a Cerebro way of finding mutants that they would not have found otherwise. And it's kind of like really ingenious how they kind of go undercover to save mutant lives. I thought that was really, really, really interesting.
Ruth, and I'm kind of guessing you read this and went, what?
Well, I mean, I understand the my only real question is, do people not know who these guys are? Like, do they not? I thought people would know. Maybe
They
I'm wrong. I
put on fake mustaches with that. Come on, no one can tell.
But the red glasses,
There's a
I
red
don't
glasses guy and there's a red-headed girl on both versions of the T.
Yeah.
Right? And there's like a really rich blonde dude and a Hulking, I don't know. Anyway, it's the American consciousness. It is entirely possible that they have forgotten about the OG X-Men by now.
This is the era where Cyclops left Madeline and went back to Jean, and it's like a thing maybe people have never forgiven him for. Watch later this month for the trial of Scott Summers on the Gray Malkin Lane podcast, where we are ending the year with that particular trial. I love this era in its way. It's complicated. It's very early 80s Saturday morning cartoon, but there's a lot of key concepts and like life-altering things that happen to these characters that would never have happened otherwise. This is Archangel. This is Apocalypse. This is Cameron Hodge. Even the ship, right? X-Factor lives at Apocalypse's giant like skyscraper. Scraper sentient ship, which is a story where they have the sentient headquarters that we see so often in the comics nowadays. Now, in this particular particular mission, the character Cameron Hodge, and by the way, the writer and penciler on this story is Bob Layton. Cameron Hodge is Warren Worthington's childhood friend who is very, like, Trump Republican. He would be in Trump's cabinet. He wears these creepy glasses. The ongoing theory is that he's in love with Warren and he's gay, and he's so mad at Warren that he has to kill his woman and then, like, I will make myself live forever just so I can make you pay forever. He's now like an immortal technarch robot thing that he's a terrible character, but he's worse than Henry Peter Gyrick, which is saying something. Cameron Hodge is an awful, awful, evil guy. He has informed X-Factor that the members of the Soviet embassy want to hire them for a mission because they want to see how X-Factor as the mutant hunters are doing what they do so effectively. Now, behind the scenes, X-Factor is actually rescuing mutants. This is like characters like Richter and Leech and Artie and Rusty Collins and Skids and Boom Boom, who all get to like live with them in their ship, and it becomes this kind of robust cast of found family. I have a lot of affection for early X-Factor.
I kind of second everything you just said. The only thing, I don't like Leech because I play a lot of Marvel Snap and his card is like so annoying. But besides that, I agree, like the found family of it all is always what brings me to X-Men and things like Guardians, like any kind of found family thing, you got me on board. So
Ruth, and I feel like you would really love the character Skids.
I mean, I'm not familiar, but I'll go look it up after this is over.
Skids, kind of Debbie Gibson energy, like lives in the streets, skates around on her force field, you know, like Maya Bialik kind of energy. She's like Zoe Deschanel quirky girl energy. I think you'd like her a lot, actually.
Like Punky Brewster the Mutant. That sounds about right.
Okay, so Cameron Hodge brings in some characters named Ms. Sasha Yasnov and Major Nikolai Lizbek from the Soviet Socialist Republic. And Lizbek explains, "My government is extremely interested in studying X-Factor's techniques for mutant detection. We, of course, have no such problems in the Soviet Union, but my government would like to develop a contingency plan should such a problem ever arise." Very thinly veiled subterfuge here, man. So they invite X-Factor, the mutant hunters, to Russia to address the scientific community on the, quote, mutant phenomenon. And they've already requested permission from the American State Department. X-Factor considers not going, but the Senate Committee on Mutant Affairs insists. These are the mutant hunters. So the committee's like, we gotta send them mutant hunters over to Russia to train them. Ugh, it's already getting a little uncomfortable. When they arrive over in Russia, there's a mutant that attempts to escape a prison encampment, and he ends up getting killed by a patrolling Crimson Dynamo unit. There's a lot of versions of Crimson Dynamo. This particular one is Dmitry Bukharin. Senator David Thompson privately meets with X-Factor to show them photos of a mass mutant grave that has been discovered in Russia. Charles, will you read this speech by David Thompson?
I'm not going to be able to do it in a great accent like yourself, but...
This guy's American. You're good.
Okay, good.
This is David Thompson.
All right. An operative in CIA intelligence leaked what they knew to our committee. Apparently, one of our operatives got these photos out of the USSR by paying at the cost of his life. Some vital information, such as the exact location of this medical death camp, unfortunately died with him. But I pieced together enough to perhaps be of some use to you, and you can be used to these unfortunate. A program is underway to discover and replicate the biological information stored in mutant genes. The project's goal is to reproduce at will the non-random X-Factor anomaly. In essence, with unborn children, they wish to create an army of mutant soldiers. I needn't emphasize the terrifying consequences if such a project is successful. It's the master... I'm cut off. It's the master race scenario gone mad. The KGB has been rounding up Soviet mutants for some time. We believe one man is responsible for this, for the entire program. Dr. Wolfgang Hallmund Heinrich, born in East Germany in 1982. He was recruited by the KGB and worked for them as a biological weapons scientist until recently. It is rumored his father was instrumental in Hitler's genetics program during the war. I suspect he's carrying on the family's business in Russia.
Okay, so first thing to address, Russia's like, we don't have a mutant problem. First thing they see when they land is a mutant runs out and then gets killed right in front of them. He's attacking the plane as a sign of protest. Then they get pulled aside by an American senator who has evidence of mass graves of mutants because a guy died getting these photos out, which is very concentration camp trying to alert the American media energy, right? We also have a direct reference to a guy named Wolfgang Helmut Heinrich, which is a clear parallel parallel to the German mad scientist Heinrich Himmler, who is infamous for just horribly killing a lot of people. They're experimenting on mutants, trying to withdraw the gene and give it to babies so that they can have superpowered weapons at will, which is a very, again, the communism part here is like really rough there. But Weapon X was doing the same fucking thing over in like Canada and America, right? America also had a super soldier program. Go read the Isaiah Bradley, Captain America story, for example,
Yes.
or the Luke Cage story, for God's sake. Ruthann, what was your thoughts on kind of seeing this kind of very deep opening? This is one of the major shifts, by the way, in X-Men comics for things getting very deadly for mutants. And I don't think people really remember. It doesn't show the mass grave, but we have the phrase mass grave. We have the phrase master race. We have a direct reference to Heinrich Himmler on the page, and mutants are the victims this time. It's a rough story in that way.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting actually that they didn't show the photos. That seems to me something that in a modern comic would happen, but what you have is you have the description and then you have the reaction on their faces, right? Which I thought was almost more meaningful. You read it and you're like, yep, that's terrible. We recognize that. And then you think, okay, we know that we were doing that too, right? But we're on the right side, so it was okay. And we weren't quite that bad, so maybe not. I do have one point of order. There is no way that Heinrich was born in East Germany in 1932 because East Germany did not exist in 1932. That is all.
sliding time scale. Maybe they just met like Germany in the East.
Maybe. My wife also said that Hitler didn't have a genetics program. He had a eugenics program, but that might just be a simple vocabulary problem.
yeah, maybe. Eugenics means something very different.
Yeah.
I have talked about this on the show before. I've made a documentary about a hate crime. We wanted to keep it respectful while talking about the horrible things that happened to the victim in my film, Gordon Church, without showing the photos. But I had a whole day of going through crime scene photos in the police station, and we recorded them all, but they also just recorded me going through the photos. And in the final version of the film, we cut all the photos out and we just had like a minute long segment of me reacting to the photos. And it just like rips my guts out every time I see the film. So that's an effective way of conveying horror without showing the horror. But the stakes are really high here.
This is what makes me love comics and what makes comics my intro to storytelling to make me want to become a writer, because you can take comics and take writing and just use the real world trauma, real world issues, and bring it to this medium of cartoons and, like you said earlier, Saturday morning cartoons, like this kind of medium that younger people can see, and they can see that there's these real issues in the world that's tangible to them because they're mutants in this case. And I just thought it was very powerful that you're hearing these terminologies that you just mentioned that are being used in our real life, moments when they're talking about Jews in Germany, when they're talking about Black people in, America. Like, these are terms used for master race and things like that. And I thought it was very powerful. To your point, I thought, like Ruthann, that they didn't show these pictures. I kind of think there's even more power in them not doing it, because our minds can just take, reactions and things like that, and we can make the incident so much more harrowing than what we could see on the page. I always bring it back to, like, this is not similar, but somewhere in the sense that we don't need to see everything to get the effect of it. But if you look at something like the Solo movie, when it's like, oh, here's Han Solo doing the Kessler Run, and it's like, well, that wasn't as cool as I thought it was when I heard about it in the 70s when he was talking about it to Lando, Like, sometimes we don't need to see things to get the stakes, because our minds, the imagination is the best form of getting there. So
I thought
all that was very interesting.
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
So when we think of mutant tragedy, we go Genosha, we go M-Day, but mass graves in Russia from X-Factor number one, that's not one that crosses your mind. So the X-Men fly to Russia, there are armed guards waiting for them, and then there are a couple of mutants that are very little known and very little explored. One of them is named Seamoss. He's super strong and very durable. They attack and they take the Americans hostage, their goal being that they want to trade them for mutant hostages that the Soviet government is keeping. One of the mutant rebels gets shot, which inspires Bobby to call the guards that are opening fire, "You stinking commie butchers." They get escorted to a hotel where X-Factor meets Heinrich. They show their commercials from America. Call this number if you see a mutant, to the scientific community. But it turns out Heinrich himself, the guy that's doing the death camps, the guy that is experimenting on people, is also a mutant. Again, very little known, very little used mutant character who has very Mr. Sinister energy and like severe Nazi ties, like Baron Strucker kind of ties. His name is Doppelganger, which means direct copy, basically. And he has the power to copy the powers of other mutants. It's one more of those guys, like Gideon, like Rogue, like Hope. He can copy your powers and make himself look like you.
You could help people like yourself, but you choose instead not to. It's kind of hard actually here to see what the incentive might be to do that, unless he just really likes power and wants an army. It's just a disappointment, really.
You know, in a Soviet system, there's some of this idea in fiction that you get rewarded if you do something unethical, right? Like if you're powerful, you're not allowed to have more unless the government says you can. Like it makes you feel special. But this guy's just a fucking torturous, awful serial killer. Just terrible. He's the Mr. Sinister of Russia. Doppelganger steals Iceman's powers and look, and then he plants himself on the team, which again, we haven't even got to Blind Faith yet, you guys, but there's a lot of crazy stuff here. He orders the real Iceman to be put to death, but there's a guy posing as a waiter who notices. He says, "Holy Grail to Holy Ghost." He's worked with the mutant rebels, and his name is Father Alexei Garnov. Putting on a priest collar, he takes mental control of a few men, thinking, "In the name of God, you cannot disobey," and deletes their memories. And he lets Seamoss take Bobby away. Bobby is taken back to their rebel base in a basement where he meets more mutants, one named Mikhail, and they keep him in ropes because they're not quite sure what to do with this guy. So the leader of this rebellious movement is a priest. It's a telepathic priest from Holy Grail to Holy Ghost.
That's how you want to be introduced, right? I mean,
in the name of God, you will not move.
It's funny because we're talking about all this like real world tangibility that you have and the parallels of this story to Stalin and all this kind of stuff. And then you just have this over the top cartoon, like, you will not. I was a little jarred when that happened. Like, oh no, is he going to be one of these kind of characters? But I was, you know, as we're going to get there, I think he really won me over by the end. And I really, really enjoyed his character because he kind of toned that over the topness down a little bit.
Bit. And one of the reasons I want to call him like the Russian Charles Xavier, Xavier's very morally complex, right?
Yes.
If we've got this guy who's like doing all this in the name of Jesus while wearing his priest collar into combat, but also he like sees himself as really good and really trying hard, there's some really interesting stories. So Bobby's in ropes and Garnov turns to him and says, "Listen closely to my words, American. We have rescued you from the KGB, but you'll fare no better unless you cooperate. If you have come to this country to assist the secret police in the persecution of our brother mutants, you shall rue the day." But Bobby tears out of his ropes because he has ice powers. And then he explains to the very complicated real premise of X-Factor to everyone. They explain, "We are known by our code names here. These men," and again, little known mutants, "these men are known as Mentak, the living computer, Concussion, Iron Curtain, and Siberian Tiger." Based on name alone, Ruth Ann, fuck, marry, kill the living computer, Concussion, and Siberian Tiger.
We're going to fuck Siberian Tiger and we're going to marry the living computer and maybe kill Concussion.
This is like a little strong guy, right? Garnov also explains how Heinrich himself is a mutant. "Satan works in many guises, my son. Many died in our attempts to uncover his secrets. Now the devil has taken your form and seeks to destroy those you love most. We must hasten to their aid before the evil one can carry out his vile deception." So again, more complicated, but the Professor X character is a priest. The evil Magneto guy is this awful guy who can take your place, right? One can read your thoughts, one can take your place. It's complicated. Ruthann, do you want to tell us about Angel going into stealth stealth mode while he's looking for the death camp.
Yeah, so I mean, he goes into stealth mode. He also gets seen, so I think that's why he did not go into stealth mode before he got seen. Somewhat of a mystery. He brings the others in. He sends his signal. You know, he's working on very limited knowledge, so he's like, it's supposed to be here, but it could be hundreds of miles away. But lucky for him, it was there, in fact. So he manages to bring the team in.
I like when he gets sent on like a flight mission. It's like the one thing he's good at.
Yeah, don't get me started on Angel. Like, what is he good at? He can fly.
Well, you know, later he gets metal wings, and he's very rich also.
Angel's like hype man in DC. Like, can he really help the team, or is he just there because like his daddy was rich? I don't know.
Now, to be clear, this is the only appearance of the character Doppelganger. At the end of this story, he's been posing as Iceman. Doppelganger gets defeated. They then rescue some mutants, they meaning Garnoff. And then Garnoff sends X-Factor back to America. He leaves some like thoughts in their brain and like alters their memories. It's very Professor X while he's protecting his people. And they think Heinrich's dead, but he's not. And we've never seen that character again, which is insane to me. I have a list of like, holy shit, how have we never done anything with this gold mine of a character? This is a terrible supervillain, and there's so many stories to be told. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he was on the same plane back with them. He was just at the back of the plane. It's wild.
They have him like tied up in ropes, and he's gone. They think he's dead, but he's not. I don't know. There's a whole story there. This is a very sinister villain with ties to fucking Hydra and Arnim Zola and whoever you want to have him tied to, you know? We then jump to a crazy title. We're not going to take time to record the whole history of this team, but Russia has a group of superheroes that go by many names because every few years the government changes and we got to change the team name with them. So this team in the 90s becomes the Soviet Super Soldiers. Fabian Isier is a story. What were your thoughts on like the art here?
This is one with Firefox, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. He sent the Captain America like shows up in this. I thought that was interesting. And he sent to capture these mutants, and Garnoff arrives and with concussion and Iron Curtain to get these three away to safety. They were aided to two Soviet scientists, you know, kind of it's kind of like a standard Saturday morning cartoon, if you will. Like
it's very specifically set after the fall of the Soviet Union, which is a huge event in the news in the late 80s, early 90s. Again, a lot of crazy shit. Go look up the Berlin Wall if you've never heard of it. Like there's a lot of crazy history wrapped in here. So to see Captain America, he's got captured mutants who were in America on a mission. And these are the three mutant members of their hero team. They're like Avengers, basically. One is Ursa Major, who's a character I love. This is a little dude that turns into a big giant grizzly bear. Jason Aaron's used him in the Avengers recently, where he's just a big drunk bear. Darkstar and Vanguard are twins. Darkstar manipulates the Dark Force. Vanguard is a telekinetic. And they're taken to a research facility in Siberia. This is where we see Garnoff again. And those characters that we met in an earlier issue, Concussion and Iron Curtain, are here. And they are there to liberate the mutant Avengers, basically. So the story here akin is like the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants breaking in to like rescue the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver from captivity, right? It's that kind of energy. And this is where we see the Soviet scientists who are helping them, named Dr. Zoya Vasilevna and Dr. Arkady Tagay. The GRU, which is a real governmental organization in Russia, then recruits a guy named Firefox. And I would call this guy the Russian version of Cable. His real name is Grigory Andreevich. He's like a grizzled old man with a gun arm. And he's like their little mercenary dude. They're sending him around like Terminator style. He's got a lot of, again, like Cable energy.
A weird old man with a gun arm. Yeah. Sounds about right.
So after they escape with the mutant captives, Firefox tracks them. The mutant rebels now are living in like a farm in Ukraine, and they're openly being hunted by the government. So them even existing is a sign of like huge protest in this era where a lot of times the stories about Russia in this like early 90s era were about poverty and famine and people not having resources. So some of the characters get killed here. Mentak, the living computer, is gone. Sorry, Ruthann, you're now a widow.
I'm a widow.
Iron Curtain is killed. The survivors include a couple of new characters. One is a mutant woman named Stencil, who seems to have like multiple man style, like different identities, and she can like pull other minds into herself. They escape into the city of Novosibirsk, but the military closes in on them in less than a week. Their place has been surrounded by helicopters. They have to fight. Dark Star helps them escape this time. So open act of rebellion. A Siberian Tiger has changed their name to Cyber Cat here. His real name is revealed to be Ilyich Lavrov, and the group soon joins with the rest of the mutant underground. They know they're being hunted. Firefox is killing one mutant at a time as he hunts them down. It's like the Marauders. This guy's more like Grey Crow, I guess. They're hiding on a docked ship. Meanwhile, these Soviet super soldiers, including a new Red Guardian, this guy is named Joseph Petkus, and this is Russia's Thor. There's a guy named Perun who is just a big shirtless Viking guy with a hammer, like basically. There's a Vision style character named Sputnik, a very different character, but has its own mythology. All of these characters could get Patreons. We again have Dmitry Bukharin as the Crimson Dynamo, and now there's a very weird character named Phantasma, who's kind of like this weird, crazy witch woman who has a bunch of weird history. Another wild character, truly. This is the team that works for the government, and they have been sent to beat up some environmental activists in Finland who have been trying to topple Russia's nuclear submarine program. There's a new unicorn here. This is a guy that has like an eye on his head that shoots lasers. I have a unicorn episode, the main unicorn, with my friend Daryl Lawrence way back at the beginning of the show. That's another Russian character. Rutha, do you have fond memories of unicorn?
Just the fact that there is a main unicorn and a new unicorn.
This guy has an eye in his head that fights lasers. The main unicorn gets a point where, like, he feeds the eye that's in his head. Like, this is a weird character. Again, go back to that episode. Unicorn is insane. This is the supervillain wandering around the streets just killing people. He gets captured, taken back to the doctors that we met earlier. Turns out that the doctors are secretly mutants, and they can combine their forms into one entity. When they touch, it's like, I don't know if they're twins, but they touch and they become a character. It's called Synthesizer. There's a light form that allows them to manipulate energy. Because of the art style on this book, these characters are a lot to juggle. It's kind of hard. This is not an easy read. You have to read very closely and like really pay attention to who the characters are, because the art is really early 90s and really jaunty and jarry.
I did think when Synthesizer, I was like, so it's just Goku and Vegeta fusing is what you're telling me is happening right now. Okay, I can follow.
We love a hive mind. We were just talking about the Kleinstock brothers, like who all mix together in the Acolytes. So Garnoff and the Mutant Underground get attacked by Firefox directly. The military is with him. More mutants get killed. And this time, Garnoff and the mutants win the fight. In the end of this, there are four major things that happen. Number one, Garnoff forces Firefox to publicly speak out about all of the anti-mutant shit happening in Russia. So a mental command for a government murdering assassin to stand in front of the cameras and speak the truth. Second, well, the removal of Will is always a tricky thing, but when you see it used for the right reasons, right? Second, the Supreme Soviets rebrand themselves at the end of this. Now they're calling themselves the People's Protectorate. Later they become the Winter Guard. And Bukharin has now taken on the name Airstrike. There's a decision for the government-sponsored heroes to turn against the government. This is the Avengers declaring their own, mission statement, basically. The third thing, there's a group called the Remont Four that forms. And these characters are Titanium Man, the Shalatov version of Crimson Dynamo, this new also awful unicorn whose name is Yegor Balanov, and Firefox. These are characters that Fabiani Cieza will pick up again. And lastly, the mutants decide to form their own group. The issue ends with Garnoff stating, "Winds of change already sweeping through this republic. We must ride those winds, striking where and when we can, surreptitiously, subtly, for mutant kind and mankind alike. Though we are exiles from mainstream life, we must fight for the rights of others to live it. I am blind faith." Here we have him choosing his name. "And all of us, Nikolai Krelanko, Vanguard, Lenia Petrovna, Darkstar, Ilyich Lavrok, Cybercat, and Mikhail Rokolovich, Ursa Major, and Stencil, all of us know our eventual goal, for the hope of this great land and its people is nothing short of the unilateral, unequivocal overthrow of the Soviet Socialist government. Are you all with me?" So if we read this character initially as Professor X, which is the let's keep the peace, now we see him turned Cable. He's formed his own like mutant rebel force, and no one's ever done anything with that story either. What are your thoughts, Ruthann, on the name Blind Faith for this character?
I mean, he's a priest. I'm not really sure where it comes from, actually. In his first iterations, like as a priest, like, is Blind Faith something that he has in their mission? Is it something he's demanding from other people, to support them in what they're doing? I'm actually not quite sure. That's why it took me so long to figure out who Blind Faith was in the first book.
The term blind faith itself, if we apply it in a religious context, what does that mean?
I mean, it means taking something as truth without any evidence to back it up, right? Without any capacity to prove it one way or the other.
The absolute and unequivocal belief in something, right?
Yeah.
So you get the idea, and this character's story is never told. We don't have his origins fleshed out. But if he initially put all of that faith in God, and maybe he at some point had that faith in his own government, now in the fall of the Soviet Union, which is the real story being told. We have him turning his blind faith toward revolution, toward hope. And this character's story has never been explored really, but the idea of this Professor X-like character taking that journey and now openly, because they've been hiding, and now he's saying, we're going to fight. And he's got some of the most national superheroes on his team now. Again, we've never done anything with this story, but there's some huge potential here.
I love this character. This is when I was like all in on this character at this point when the speech happens. I know, like, with his powers, yes, he's very similar to Charles, but for me, he reads more like Magneto, you know, like not to the extreme of Magneto, but he is building a team. They are going to stand and he knows what the problems are and he's not taking it, as opposed to Charles is more that MLK of like, we all need to work together. We can turn the other cheek. You know what I mean? Violence is not the end, you know, all the kind of rhetoric that Charles always has that Eric does not particularly care for. So I like the fact that he is taking this stand of saying, hey, this is what's going on. We need to do this for all of mutant kind. Now, once he's saying we all need to work together and get along, we all can be, he's like, no, mutants need to do this. We need to stand up. We need to overthrow this government. Are you with me? Point blank, period. You know, so I really like that.
Yeah, I think it's really smart storytelling, this idea of open rebellion and the fall of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. I don't know what other plans Fabian Nicieza had. Maybe I'll have him back on someday and ask again, but he probably wouldn't remember. It's been a long time. We could take this character in the modern era and explore these parts of his journey from the early days, his connection to Xavier, and how that mission statement has changed over, you know, decades for us, but years for him, because that's how stories work. Another really common trope in Russian storytelling is the idea of, like I said, the sleeper agent. There's this huge weapon that we used. It became too powerful, and now we've put it to sleep, right? If you go back to early Captain America books, there's literally a bunch of sleeper robots that he fights. They're robots that the Nazis like buried in different places, and they keep getting wakened up. They're woke up to fight, and they're literally called sleepers. Omega Red is that story. Omega Red is a very terrible villain who has been acculturated into draining your life and like ripping you apart with his tentacles as he eats your soul, basically, you know? And he's that weapon that gets awakened later. We now get a story, again, by Fabian Nicieza in the X-Men Volume 2, X-Men Blue era, early 90s. In X-Men Volume 2, 17 through 19 is where we get the Soul Skinner storyline, where it's another sleeper agent. This one is, again, it's also a dense read. And Alexei Garnov is here again, but it's one that people are much more familiar with. In this case, the guy has not been put to sleep, but this is a deadly mutant whose power is basically to draw upon psychic soul energy from people and leave them as kind of mindless husks.
I thought he was Shadow King at first.
Kind of astral energy about him, but it's kind of like he's a bomb, like he will absorb you. There's a mimic story about this that we covered on my show earlier this year. Like, if I get close to you, I'll take your life force. And he has been allowed to forget that he's a mutant. He's living in a small town called Neftelinsk. He has like a wife and child, and he's just kind of living his life.
I thought this was a really interesting villain. Specifically, I mean, yes, drained life force, but specifically feeding on people's pain, because he had pain, and so that was, he became the thing that he needed to continue to exist. He's also a lot like Nightmare in the current iterations, who like basically, you know, consumes grief to stay powered. I did find this really difficult to follow with the art at some point, because he takes over other people too. It's really hard to separate the Soul Skinner himself from the person whose like physical form he takes. I really found this story compelling just because of just that ever presence of pain and that sort of like how they identify with each other through grief.
So the Soviets buried this weapon. The population starts going brain dead. Their minds and souls are being absorbed by this guy. So Blind Faith and Dark Star are sent in. We don't know kind of what has happened to them. We don't know where they're necessarily, their mission statement is here, but they are sent in to investigate, and they end up getting taken over by the Soul Skinner as well. Blind Faith can't sense the civilians, right? It's like the zombie mind, like these people are gone. Before they're absorbed, they get attacked by mental images of things that torture them. Dark Star is assaulted by a mental image of her father, who again is the walking Chernobyl guy, the presence, a character that I love. She goes flying away, and then we hear Garnov say, I lost mental contact, as if someone had wiped a blackboard slate clean, not even leaving a spiritual resonance in its wake. Who could have enough psychic power to do all of this and still remain masked to a telepath of my abilities? And then we have, again, it's very Shadow King in that way. I could, Alexei Garnov, show me your layers of pain, my little mutant fool. So much of it inside your kind, isn't there? Would that I had soon played with all of you. Your father did that? For shame. Show me your pains, priest. Confess your sins. And maybe if you're lucky, I will give you absolution. I will give you the cold comfort of death. So alluded to the fact that Garnoff may have been sexually abused as a child. They then send a Mega Red in, and Soulskinner takes this guy's mind. The X-Men jump in. Cyclops, Wolverine, Jubilee, Psylocke are here. They're sent to investigate. And then the government starts to freak the fuck out. Like, we're losing, and we have to get a secret weapon to combat. Now, in this era of the comics, Ilyana Rasputin has reverted to childhood. This is before she dies of the Legacy virus. She was the crazy limbo demon dark child, right? Part of the New Mutants after she got kidnapped and like became an adult. But now she's back to being 7 years old. And the government's plan is if we kidnap her, we can experiment on her and revert her back to her dark self. And that's the thing that we can use against the Soulskinner. Rough story, right? Because what happens to Ilyana's parents as a result of this? Ruthann, do you want to talk about this?
I mean, the government just comes to take her and put her in their experimental box, and then they just shoot them.
Yeah. This is the story where Piotr's mom and dad get gunned down by the government because they wanted his sister, who's a child. It's rough. I've done a lot of family episodes. I haven't done a Rasputin family episode yet. I would love to, but his parents are these like very simple, loving, very accepting farmers who love their kids, even though they're mutants, and they keep taking their fucking kids away, and now they're gunned down and killed. Rough. It's raw. I don't know if either of you are a big Colossus fan. I'm a huge Colossus fan.
Going back to the Soulskinner really quick, because when you were reading that, it even reminded me more of like the Adversary, who we saw in X-Men 97 this year, with getting in the Storm's mind and feeding off of Storm's pain and her, you know, instability, you know. So I really like the fact that, as Ruthann said, he attacks the pain. Like, that's how he gets his you know, his powers. Yeah, the thing I love about Colossus is that, you know, his parents were murdered. Like, there's so much trauma, so much pain. And Colossus is such a strong character, you know, in regarding to he can't be dented or anything like that. You know, he's super strong, all this kind of stuff. But he always has this calm demeanor. He never uses any of it for evil, which he could easily do in Justice. He could easily be a villain. Any other person would be a villain if they just had the government murder their family in front of them. You know, he could easily go down that other road, but he never does. You know, he's always soft smoking. He's always very level-headed and understanding of the world, is essentially like, hey, this isn't great, but this doesn't mean I have to be a villain because of this. You know, I don't have to give into that, which I always loved about Colossus.
One of the characters we haven't discussed at all, and again, deserves his own Patreon episode, there's a long list of Claremont characters that he uses frequently, but we just don't think about them. One of them is basically the Henry Peter Gyrick of the Soviet Union. It's a character named Alexei Vajin. And this guy has appeared over 20 times, most of them in Claremont stories. He's in the Trial of Magneto story. He's connected to Valerie Cooper and the Thieves Guild. And he's just like the government guy calling the shots and like keeps making corrupt decisions, but acting like he's your friend. Like there's a lot of that energy. In the end of the story, he ends up killing the Soulskinner. And the weapon is now down. All the people in the area are dead. A lot of the people. Did you get the sense, Ruthann, that the people revived at the end? I understood it as the civilians remained dead, but maybe it was open to interpretation.
I think so. I think maybe I thought that they had revived, but I'm not sure.
Ilyana gets saved and gets the Legacy virus right after this and then dies. Again, we have magic back. But this is the story where the Rasputin parents die. And we see Blind Faith used by Nicieza in this story relatively prominently alongside Darkstar as an ally to the X-Men fighting these corrupt threats. Pretty strong story. And again, another appearance of this character. The only other time we really see him is in Starblast number one. This is a crazy wonky 90s art place. You don't even need to look this up. The Winter Guard, or the People's Protectorate, or the Soviet Super Soldier, has briefly renamed itself Cyberforce. And they are based in Siberia. And we see Garnoff very briefly when Vanguard and Darkstar rush off to investigate a threat in space. That's basically it for this character. I think we don't know what his relation is in any like post any stories, like anything in the 2000s, any Krakoa level stories. What are your thoughts on Blind Faith or Father Alexei Garnoff? What are the pieces of this character that compel you? What are the stories you'd like to see about him?
Yeah, like I said, I love this character. I think I could easily see him, and maybe they give him his own episodes and arc in another season of X-Men 97 or something like that. But I think he would really translate to a character in a film or a TV show or something, because like I said, like that Schindler's List of it all, of this mutant who is in the government or you know, a place in the government that he can get into spaces that other mutants can't, because one, he's, until he comes out as a mutant, people don't know he's a a priest, he can move into these spaces that other mutants can't. So he can actually save them and help them in from the inside. I think that's just so interesting. And then when you realize his power is this telepathic thing, like a Charles Xavier, I mean, that just gives you so many ways to go on that. So it's just like this well of just character and story that's there that's just waiting to be tapped. Hopefully one day someone does come around and really give him his just due. But yeah, he's just such an interesting character. And I love the way what he stands for and his, I mean, his speeches. While his first one was a little bit over the top, he brought it down and he really brought it home with the really good speech he gave about all of these, to stand together and who's with me.
I think he's fascinating.
I agree. It's such an interesting, he's just in such a specific point, like story-wise, historically speaking. I mean, anyone who knows me knows that what I want is backstory. I'm always interested in finding out how people ended up where they are. But I think in particular, because of where this was historically, it would be really interesting to find out where he goes, right? Like as the things in the world around him change, okay, the Soviet Union was overthrown, right? So where does he go? Where does this revolution idea that he's got move on from that? Because there's going to be somewhere else it needs to show up, right? So, I mean, maybe they were still in space all through Krakoa and he'll show up again now.
Yeah, you know, Russia had a complicated history with Krakoa itself. This is where Colossus's brother Mikhail was using that character, the Chronicler, who's like a Russian drunk novelist who controlled Colossus for years, for several months at least, by writing about him. He allied with Orcus. He was trying to build his own mutant nation. And Mikhail is a huge X-Men villain that's also not used super often. I've written this character, not in a published work, but I'm really fascinated by Alexei Garnov. The idea of his childhood, the idea of him joining the priesthood and trying to be a certain kind of mutant, and then becoming aware of those mass graves, the idea of him rebelling against the government, but still holding on to that kind of very Christian identity. I almost see him as like a lapsed priest at this point, like a priest was his old job. And so his relation to faith, there's a lot of other characters that move around him that I think are really interesting as well. But his telepathic place in this space, his connection to characters like Darkstar, never implied he's connected to Xavier, but I can see some really interesting stories there. We throw Moira McTaggart into one story with this guy, and then we suddenly want to know a whole bunch more, right? I think he's really, really interesting, and there's a ton of untapped potential. Again, the doppelganger guys running around too. There's so many unexplored X-Men stories where these characters, even though they're largely forgotten, you can use two caption boxes and completely change how people see them and think about them. I had a great time with you both today. Thank you for taking this journey with me. This is one of those that I just, I'm really fascinated with, and my brain goes to him way more than it should. As we're wrapping up, we're going to put this out at the beginning of December on the Patreon. The very next episode coming out on the Patreon after this is going to be all about the Red Queen. Remember that time when Nate Gray came from the Age of Apocalypse and landed on our Earth, and the first thing he did was create a physical version of his counterpart's mom, and then they made out and slept together for a while, but then it turned out she was an alternate Jean Grey. Yeah, that's where we're going next time, so be ready for that insanity. Over on the main show, we're wrapping up the year with some final Silver Age stories and kind of celebrating Cyclops before we completely change the show in January. We're going to be delving into classic X-Men 41-42, which is a Scott Summers and the Orphanage Claremont story. My guests on that are the creative team behind Avengers Academy. I get to meet Bailey Rosenlund for the first time, Anthony Oliveira, and Sarah Brunstad coming back to the show. Where can people find both of you online? And is there anything you would like to plug? And any final thoughts you have also, great. Let's go Ruth and then Charles.
Well, I do want to just iterate, it will come as no surprise to anyone that I have absolutely no recollection about whatever you were talking about with Nate Gray.
just listen to next week. You'll get a whole education.
Yeah. Can't wait.
One of the worst X-Men stories of all time. It's incestual. It's terrible.
That's anyway, saying we'll something. I'm going to be honest with you. In terms of finding me, the easiest place to find me usually is just on Instagram. You can find me at Hedda Dabbler, which is like an Isbin play, but with ADHD. I don't have anything to plug currently. We're not in December yet. If I keep up the way I'm going, my Instagram will be photos of the sky and photos of my cats, which is always very exciting. And I'm really looking forward to future iterations of This Is For Ruth Ann on Grey Malkin Lane. So can't wait.
That's going to be a new tagline. Thanks for listening. And you're just one of my dearest, favorite, most favorite people to hang out with, my friend. It's so good to see your face this morning. And Charles.
Yeah, thank you both for having me. And it was such a pleasure meeting you, Dan. I was just so great hearing you speak and interact with you on this. I would say the Red Queen that Chad just spoke about, that story sounds awful. I haven't read that one. But Red Queen is pretty cool in X-Men 97, the animated series. If you haven't seen it, they did a pretty good episode in episode 3. And her character ties into one of the greatest episodes in anything television in the past decade, I would argue, in episode 5. Or remember it. Like Chad said, my name is Charles A. Bush. You can find me on all the socials, Charles A. Bush. That's TikTok, Instagram, X, whatever you would like to go. So jump on my website, Charles A. Bush. My book, Every Verbal of Us, like I said, is out now wherever books are sold. And I have a comic book that's also on my website that you can also take a look at. And if you like what you see, tell everyone you can so we can get some good word of mouth and we can get this thing published and out to the world. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Any updates on Armor Girl?
Yeah, so nothing yet. We just went on our second round of submissions last week on that. So it's in the hands of a couple of editors at places and we're just waiting to get that yes so we can go ahead and make this thing.
Excellent. It's so good to see you. Thank you for hanging out. I'm going to get just real serious and then we're going to wrap up. We are doing this in a time where we are all, as queer people, as people of color, as disabled people, etc., afraid of our own fucking country. I mean, not that we've never have been before, but what is about to happen and the power that has been put into hands of people who do not value us, it's a scary thing. Reading this story today, although it wasn't the plan, about rebellion in the face of fucking mass graves and government manipulation and civilian casualties, it's an uncomfortable thing, but it's something powerful to reckon with. And I think any X-Men comic kind of has this energy in its way, but this one, especially with that X-Factor storyline that we opened with, really has a lot of resonance. So fight, everybody. We gotta fight. We gotta hope and fight together as we are living in that dread together at the same time. Thank you.
Are you all with me?
Yeah, please. I won't telepathically make any assassins like confess to the news what's happening, but God, do I hope someone does.
I wish we could. I wish Charles could have telepathically got into Trump's head and made him say, you know what, dropping out, just Kamala wins just off of me just not wanting to do it.
But you know, we have this story in X-Men Mutant Politics too, right? It's the conservative platform. It's fucking Graydon Creed and Simon Trask and like it's oh yeah. So exhale, smile, and we get to nerd out over superheroes together.
I don't know if you noticed that after the election, hashtag Magneto was right was trending everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So Magneto was right and he's always been right.
And he still is, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks everybody for listening. We will see you all back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.